97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. You know where he is. He's on the golf course getting ready for the, well, obviously it's been going on already, all the fun stuff out at the golf course. You're going out there, right, Ethan, this weekend? Going out to the course?
No, I'm the only one that's not, I think. Sue's going out there. She'll be out there. I know. I'm a little bit bummed that I wasn't on top of that. But, yeah, it looks like it'll be a great time out there. But then, Sue will be out there. And then Alex Rich, who is one of our weekly guests, he'll be out there as well.
Okay, that'll be fantastic. And coming up a little bit later in the show, we'll speak with Dan Reardon. The other Reardon, Dan Reardon, no relation, the KMOX golf correspondent, who's going to give us some updates from what's going on at Belle Reve. So very exciting weekend. It's going to be, looks like it's going to be beautiful weather. A little warm, but not too bad. Nice. Very nice. Nice time to get out. All right, among the things we're going to discuss today on the Mark Reardon Show, we're going to talk about Lindsay Clancy because the trial continues. This is a woman accused of killing her three children. I shocked at all the women out there supporting her, wearing pink with their children and everything. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up with Brad Young here in a little bit. But, you know, you go both ways on it. On the one hand, you think, oh, my gosh, I guess she had a tough time mentally. On the other hand, you don't get to kill people. You just don't get to kill people because you're having a bad day. So we'll talk about that. And I'm not a legal expert on this, but we'll talk about it coming up a little bit later. We're also going to talk about the debt. Very important to remember that we've only been out of debt one time in our entire history as a nation. I hope you knew that. Maybe you didn't. Andrew Jackson paid off our debt. After that, we were in debt. That was it. Ever since then, we've been in debt. It's gotten to the point where it's $40 trillion now. How's that going to affect you? We'll talk with the National Taxpayers Union because they want Congress to act immediately, but I'm dying to know what they want Congress to do. I'm not really sure what they can do. We'll find out coming up a little bit later. We'll also talk with the Paul Hall for the Common Guys Film Reviews. Looking forward to that. I guess Toy Story 5 comes out this week.
Toy Story 5?
Yeah, isn't it coming out this week?
No. That came out, probably a month, 6 weeks ago?
Am I that behind? Because I looked this up this morning and I said, let's look up what movies are coming out this week because I don't go to the movie theaters. Can't tell you the last time I went. I'm serious. This is what a dork I am. I thought it was coming out this week.
It did really well. The numbers on it were very strong. It was kind of a part of that three-headed monster there in a row where that came out, and then The Odyssey came out, and then the new Spider-Man came out, and they all did really well.
I wonder what it takes people to get out and see a movie. I guess my attitude about movies is I can wait and see it online in my own house without someone being rude on their cell phone or something else. Am I just a fuddy-duddy about that now?
I think that movie theaters are much less popular than they used to be. I think COVID really hit them hard, and since then it hasn't quite been the same. But there have been a handful of movie experiences, I would say, that have kind of been able to revive it, keep it alive, going back to like Top Gun Maverick and then Oppenheimer, and then The Odyssey is absolutely blown up, so is Spider-Man as well. So I hadn't gone to a movie theater in several years, and then I went twice in the same week to see both The Odyssey and Spider-Man, and both were awesome movie theater experiences. So I wouldn't be able to speak to the state of movie theaters right now, but I can say that they've had a pretty good summer.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, I want them to succeed like I want any business to succeed. I think the last movie I saw in a theater, I'm not lying, is Top Gun Maverick. And what year was that? 5 years ago?
Oh, man, that probably would have been 2021. Yeah, if I had to guess, 22 maybe.
Yikes. Well, yeah, I need to get out more. Yeah. Well, I guess if you have little kids, too, you want to see things fairly soon. We'll talk about all that coming up a little bit later in the show. I do want to start with this today because this is a win for the people who were fired when they shouldn't have been by former Sheriff Alfred Montgomery. Apparently, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC, as we lovingly call it, has announced an agreement with the St. Louis Sheriff's Office to resolve 13 charges of race and age discrimination with the EEOC and the U.S. Department of Justice. This is a big deal. And apparently, before he took office in December 2024, first thing he said was he couldn't wait to get rid of the top heavy employees. And the EEOC said this showed his bias against older workers. Well, that's the conclusion they came to. Everyone he fired was white except for one black person who complained. Why are you firing all the white people? Whoop, you're fired too. So that's what the EEOC found. I wasn't there. EEOC also said he targeted white employers for termination. As I mentioned, fired a black employee after that employee spoke out about what he saw happening to his long-term colleagues. And good for him. Good for that employee who spoke out and went, hey, this is wrong. All kind of wrong to fire all these white people, mainly because they're white. Is that the reason? So, of course, the sheriff's office denies the allegations. I don't admit doing anything wrong, blah, blah, blah. But this, you know, I'm glad to see this. They've announced an agreement to resolve 13 charges here. I mean, you just can't. There are things you just can't do. And people can complain about the government and the agencies and this and that. And I understand that. I've got a friend right now who's got an EEOC complaint because somebody on a meeting said, what did she say? Something about you don't fit our culture, but it was something a little more direct than that. And it was all about basically her age is what they were talking about. And she's probably 20 years older than the person who's now was then put in front of her as a supervisor. So now she's got a complaint. And I don't know how valid it is. It seems pretty valid to me based on what she's told me, the way they're trying to treat her. But I get it that you want a clean house once in a while, but you can't just get rid of people who are qualified just because they're older or just because they make more money. I mean, companies do this all the time, I realize. But you've got to have a better reason. So you could complain about the government and complain about these things. And we had a case in, I'm coming to you live from Las Vegas, and we had a case in Las Vegas a couple of months back where a guy had complained about his coworker, and they were having a real problem, this guy and his coworker. I mean, a real problem. I don't know what started the problem. Not sure about that. Numerous emails to HR. You got to get me off the shift, blah, blah, blah. Well, the one guy killed the other guy, killed him at work, pulled out a gun and shot him. And there were numerous emails back and forth. There's a trail of all the stuff that went on. Who knows who started it? Who knows who ultimately was at fault? We've all been in a situation at work with someone we don't like. Most people have. But you don't get to shoot somebody at work. But the frustrating thing about these kind of situations is, let's say there is and there will be a lawsuit involving this particular case in Vegas or anywhere, when there's a lawsuit about something that happened at work. Well, almost never do heads roll. Almost never. And even if the heads roll, guess who doesn't ever pay a settlement? The people who actually caused it. Like in this case in Vegas, who's ever going to pay this settlement? Nobody who's involved in it, nobody who's in HR who ignored all these complaints, they're not going to say anything. They're not going to pay anything. They might just get transferred to another department or something. Rarely is anyone even fired. And the taxpayers are on the hook. And this is what drives you crazy, because taxpayers are on the hook for bad behavior from people who should have known better. They sue us. We'll just let the taxpayers pay it. Crazy. And that goes on all the time, unfortunately. And that's the thing. If people actually had accountability, and I guess nobody wanted to take accountability in this situation to move these two people apart from each other, different shifts, something like that. And not everybody could just quit their job if they're not happy, because first of all, it's very difficult to get in with any government entity. For the most part, very difficult to get those jobs. There's a lot of competition. They have good benefits and whatnot. You get in there. What if you've got a family to support? You can't just walk. And by the way, why should you walk? Why on earth should you be the one who leaves if your boss is being a jerk or your employee is being a jerk, whatever the case may be? Why should you give up and walk and let them win when all you're asking is to be moved to another shift? So these kind of things happen, and it's nice to see somebody actually, the EEOC, getting involved in this. Because you can't just go in and fire all the white people. Not cool. So we'll see. Of course, sheriff's office still, you know, they're still not denying that this happened. Well, if there's a pattern, every single person you're firing is white and older, every single one of them, except the black person who complained, well, then, gee, I think the EEOC saw something. So that's good to know. Once in a while, there's some actual justice in the world. It doesn't happen that often, though, unfortunately. You know, at the end of the day, all you can do is do the best you can and hope that the people who should be handling things do the best they can. And if not, there are lawsuits. There's always an avenue for you. But it's very frustrating when you lose in a situation like this, especially this guy who lost his life. And then when he lost his life, there were a lot of allegations that he was the instigator and he was the problem. And, you know, when somebody shoots their boss, everyone goes, oh, well, the boss must have been a jerk. Well, maybe not. Don't know. I didn't work with either one of these people, so I don't know the truth. I worked with a producer one time years ago, not here, obviously, but, and he was, he made my co-host at the time so mad, my co-host threatened to throw him off the balcony. And And you got to understand, the co-host I had at the time was not a hothead. He didn't do that with anybody ever. He was just, even me, I drove him crazy sometimes, and he wasn't that kind of guy. But he literally, I thought he was going to throw this guy right off the balcony. He was so mad at him. And so it can get dicey at work. And that's the worst, isn't it? When you got to go to work and do your job anyway, and you're working with somebody who's driving you nuts. It's hard enough just to have a job, and then you got to deal with this. So anyway, I'm glad the EEOC came to that conclusion. Sounds like the right one, and we'll keep you posted on that. Coming up, Brad Young's going to be joining us. He's a chief legal analyst and a partner with Harris Young and Kaiser. And we're going to talk about Lindsey Clancy. This trial continues, and a lot of people are watching this because on the one hand, you've got people who've dealt with postpartum depression, and that is a real thing for somebody. Was she actually psychotic? Was she treated medically correctly? We don't know the answer to that. There are a lot of things we don't know at this point. And her husband always has gone off, gotten remarried. He's not going to deal with it. Can't blame him. So we'll talk about that and what he thinks is going to happen. Also, Carmelo Anthony, he's the young man who killed that athlete in Texas. Remember that? Pulled out a knife and just killed him. Went under the tent where the other people were hanging out. They didn't want him in their tent. They told him to leave, and he kills one of the kids. And he possibly looks like he's going to get a new trial. So that's nuts. Possibly get a new trial. That's what they're trying for. So we'll get to that much more coming up on The Mark Reardon Show. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon. Good afternoon. Looking like a great weekend for golf and all kinds of other things. Brad Young joins us, 97.1 Chief Legal Analyst. He's a partner with Harris Young and Kaiser. How are you, sir?
Heidi, it's great to talk to you again. It's been a while, and yes, it's always a pleasure.
And you always sound so clear when you come in, just like clear as a bell. I don't know where you are, but you sound especially clear.
Well, you know, I have to sound this good when I'm making arguments to judges.
Yeah, that's true. It's always good to be clear when you're doing that. All right, let's talk about Lindsey Clancy. Were the women still out there today with the pink on?
Yes, they were. They were still out there. And I'm not sure what they're going to achieve, but yeah, they're still there.
You know, it's so tough for me because on the one hand, I have not had children, but I do understand people can have horrible thoughts and a lot of problems mentally after children. It does happen. You can't say it doesn't. But, you know, you don't just get to kill your three kids and then wait till your husband leaves. I mean, that certainly speaks to planning. What I've not been able to see much of this trial. I'm working, of course. So tell me what I'm missing.
Well, you're not missing a whole lot here, Heidi, but let me break some of it down for you. The defense rested today, so they're done. They've done their case, and it's really now centered on that one solitary question. Is she criminally responsible when she killed her three kids back in 2023? The defense isn't even disputing that she killed her own kids. The defense says she was suffering from postpartum psychosis, worsened by sleep loss and medication problems and an underlying psychiatric condition. But listen, as you just mentioned a second ago, I think it's a very uphill battle for Lindsey Clancy to get any relief here, because if you look at the evidence put on by Massachusetts here, it showed that Clancy planned it.
Yep.
It also showed that she created time alone with the children by sending her husband out. She actually checked, there was evidence. She checked how long those errands would take. She moved deliberately through the house. And then she tried to make the deaths look like the product of some sort of mental collapse. So literally what the evidence put forward is I think would destroy this argument in any state. But here's the one wild card. We're in deep blue, progressive, socialist Massachusetts. All right.
Yep.
And in this state, The question's going to be, does the jury drink their own Kool-Aid in Massachusetts and say, oh, women are always right. They're always the victims. You can never question a woman. She's always the victim. If they buy that kind of malarkey, you know, women shouldn't be trusted any more than men when it comes to defendants on trial. Justice is blind. Doesn't matter what your gender is. But I just wonder, what will the jury do given the jury pool for Massachusetts?
Should be fascinating. We're speaking with Brad Young, 97.1 Chief Legal Analyst. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon. Yeah, that's crazy. I, as you mentioned, all the things that she did to plan this out, and then she jumps out of a second story window. Oh, for heaven's sake, who dies doing that?
Nobody. You know, there was a case recently here in the St. Louis area where a person claimed they tried to commit suicide, and it was a defense to a case, and they took Valium, Well, anybody that knows anything about Valium knows that you could drink, you could eat a bottle of this stuff. It's going to hurt you badly, but it gets excreted by the urine, and typically you don't die from it. So yeah, this jumping out of a second story window to me is just another element to show that she's developing evidence that she's nuts, but isn't really evidence of anything other than her planning.
Now, if Lindsay Clancy really killed her children intentionally, which obviously she killed them intentionally at that time, and it was nothing other than her killing them intentionally, what would the motive be for just getting rid of all of her kids? She was just overwhelmed. She was just tired of the burden. Has the prosecution presented any evidence to prove that she planned it and she was going to benefit in some way from this?
You know, I haven't seen that. I know what I would have argued had I been the prosecutor. I mean, if you look at her, she's attractive. If you look at her, she's also very active in social media. And I would make the argument, had I been a prosecutor in this case, that she was doing it to unbundle herself from her children so that she could be a media star or a social media influencer full time. Now, I don't see that the prosecution made that argument, but that would have been the argument that I made.
Yeah, and then you just throw it out there, and the jury can either believe that or not believe it, right? That's the whole point.
Right, but your question is very relevant here, because from the prosecution standpoint, you know the jury is going to be asking that question. And if you don't provide a satisfactory answer to why she would do it, motive is always important. Anyone that's ever watched Murder, She Wrote knows the motive is important, right? So, or Law and Order, SVU, you got to get the motive down. So if they did not address it in the case, I think that gives a slight advantage to Clancy.
Boy, that could be crazy, wouldn't it? If the prosecution didn't say, not only do we not believe she's crazy, she was going to benefit from the death of all of her children by doing this and was going to benefit in this way. And they have not done that. I would have thought they would have presented that evidence. That is interesting that they have not. And I hope that's not what screws them up.
Yeah. I didn't read through all the trial transcripts. So there may have been some argument by the prosecution, but I can tell you in the news stories that I've been reading, I haven't seen any statement regarding motive. Mm-hmm. And if the prosecution did not address it, that's a big gaping hole in their case.
I think so. Now, what about her marriage? Do we know much about her marriage? Her husband, I guess, has since moved on, gotten remarried, left town. Do we know anything about the state of their marriage at this time? Of course, it's tough having three little kids. That puts a strain on anybody's marriage, three little kids that young. But beyond that, was there an issue that we didn't or needed to know about or heard about?
Well, yeah, the only thing that I know for certain is that her husband is gone. Beyond that, I didn't see anything in the reported news stories about what she's currently doing from a dating perspective.
No, but I mean, as far as their marriage, when they were married, was there a problem in their marriage that she wanted to get out of their marriage? Do we know anything about that? Was that presented at trial that we know of?
Not that I know of, no. Yeah. In fact, as I was reading several stories earlier today about it, I saw no documented marital problems or relationship conflicts at all. Now, I will tell you that during the murder trial, her ex-husband, Patrick, testified that their marriage was, he used the word, quote, wonderful, unquote, and that they built a loving family together. And from his testimony, which I think actually helps his ex-wife, his testimony is that there was a severe, rapidly deteriorating mental health crisis in the family focused on Lindsay Clancy, and that was the problem, not any marital discord. Now, is that true or not? Don't know. I do know the prosecution did not put up any rebuttal evidence to that, so that's what the jury's going to have to consider.
And once again, if that was true and her mental health was rapidly deteriorating, why wasn't something drastic done? Like she was never left alone with the children or something like that. We all remember who was the woman years ago, put all her kids in the bathtub, drowned them all. I mean, keep an eye. If there's a problem with the woman, and we're not saying there wasn't, I'm not a doctor, I can't address that. But if there was really that severe a problem, you have somebody there 24 hours a day if you have to. You don't leave her alone with the kids.
That's true. And also, if there was this rapidly deteriorating mental health crisis in the home, then how was it that she was able then to not only plan the murders, not only time out the murders, not only time out how long her husband would be gone, how is it that she was then able to create a cover story afterwards? I mean, all of that takes a cognitive ability to deceive. And if one is in a mental health crisis, they're not calculating in terms of how to deceive. They're acting out of that mental illness. And so all of her actions would go to would be testimony and evidence against both her testimony and her husband's because of the level of planning here.
That's right. And not only that, it takes, we're not even going to get into how long it takes to strangle somebody. And we're not going to talk about that. We're not even going to do that. We're not doing that. Brad Young, great talking to you again. Appreciate you joining me on the Mark Reardon Show.
My pleasure.
Thanks. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon. Good afternoon. Looks like it's going to be a great weekend. That's nice. Brandon Arnold joins me. He's Executive Vice President of the National Taxpayers Union. We're going to talk a little bit about the national debt, $40 trillion now. Oh, that's nothing to worry about. By the way, I had to look this up because I'm not an expert on these things. Last time we were out of debt as a nation, and we were once, 1835, Alexander Jackson paid off the debt with $75 million before he paid it off. So 1835, we were debt-free. Ever since then, it's been a downhill slide. How are you, Brandon? Thanks for being here.
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
So I know you guys would like to see Congress act. I would too. What would you like to see Congress do, though? It's interesting how Scott Bessent, let me mention Scott Bessent first. I'm sure you saw this. Vice President Vance said yesterday that Treasury Secretary Bessent has a very discreet plan to shrink the nation's debt. I'm dying to know what that is. Would you have any idea there?
I wish I did. He has not returned my text messages yet, but hopefully someday. I am open to any plan that exists right now to reduce our deficits, to get our debt under control. So I do look forward to seeing what the secretary has to offer here. You know, the problem is, you know, trying to get Congress on board with such a plan, especially heading into a difficult election period. Everyone's afraid that cutting spending is going to be a bad look politically. You know, I think getting our nation's finances in order should be a political winner, especially when you talk about the broad benefits that can have, not only providing some stability to our financial picture, driving down mortgage rates, lending rates, driving down the cost of living in general, and also not putting us in this, you know, unpleasant balance where we are dependent on other countries, foreign entities, borrowing our debt in order to make our obligations. I think that's a national security risk as well. So I think there's a lot of benefits. We need a new marketing department for folks that are actually trying to balance the budget.
Well, yeah. I mean, how could we possibly, and I'm just going to ask dumb questions because I'm not an economist here. Could we do things that some people do, like try to settle our debt, bring it down a little bit? I mean, what can Congress actually do that would bring this debt down?
Yeah, and we've got to pay off our debt. We got this. First of all, the first way to address a major problem like this is to stop making it worse.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're in a position where Congress is trying to spend more. They're trying to unwind some of the good reforms that were in the One Big Beautiful Bill to squeeze out some of the waste, fraud, and abuse in federal programs, particularly in the food stamp program, which is absolutely rife with. They're trying to unwind this. They're trying to make the problem worse. And that's what the most frustrating thing is. It's tough to cut spending. I get that. It's a political challenge, but you have to do it. You know, we send people to Washington, D.C. to go to cocktail parties and to collect campaign checks. We sent them there to do the nation's work on behalf of American taxpayers. So there's a whole list of options that we can employ. Some of them are more challenging than others, especially when you talk about popular programs, Social Security and Medicare and others. But we got to get this work done. Otherwise, we're going to be in real tough trouble as a nation.
No question. We're speaking with Brandon Arnold, Executive Vice President of the National Taxpayers Union. I'm Heidi Harrison from Mark Reardon. You know, I looked up, because I didn't know this, the history of, you know, which years were worse for debt and this and that. And the debt went up 3,000% in the 1860s. Okay, I'm not going to rattle off a bunch of numbers. No one likes numbers on the radio, so stay with me here. In the 1940s, it went up 498%. Now, what do we see there? War. Okay, I'm wondering, looking at these numbers, what the Iran war is going to be costing us and adding to our debt. Do we have any idea yet?
We're talking about tens of billions of dollars, and they haven't showed their hand entirely when it comes to cost. But you see some of the military requests that they're putting in, trying to get a defense budget at about $1.5 trillion, which would be far and away the largest we've ever had. Is all that money necessary? Well, part of that depends on your views on foreign policy. I won't get into that. But anytime you're looking at the defense budget, I think you need to consider how much waste is in the Pentagon. They have never passed an audit. They're the only part of the federal government that has never passed an audit. That is troubling in its own right. We all remember the stories, particularly from the Reagan era, the gold-plated toilets, the $1,000 hammers, and so forth. And I'd like to say that's all been resolved, but I don't think they have. We're still giving money hand over fist to defense contractors. Some of that is going to very much needed weapon systems and so forth, but some of that is going to systems that are basically just jobs programs. They're not really contributing to our national defense. We are not at a point where we can afford that kind of
No, and we don't know. We don't know, by the way. They do have to replace a lot of the things they're shooting off at this point. We understand that. But, you know, that's another factor. And speaking of the 1980s, it was $908 billion during the 80s. By 1990, it was $3.2 trillion. That's a bit of a jump.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it just feels like it gets exponentially worse every year. It was just 2017 when we hit the $20 trillion threshold. And here we are doubling that. And, you know, it'd be one thing if this was just due to the pandemic. You know, we had a huge surge in spending, but we ratcheted up spending. You know, it went up for the pandemic, and some of that was understandable. We were telling people they couldn't go to work. We're shutting down businesses. We had to spend more money. But we're not in a pandemic situation anymore. And we're spending like we are. That's unsustainable. If we just went to spending back to like 2020 levels, we'd still have some fiscal problems, to be sure, but they'd be much, much more manageable.
All right. So talk to me like I'm 4 years old, for those of us who are not economic experts, and explain how, you know, briefly, how everyday costs are affected by this debt. Because there have been people over the years, even conservatives over the years, who've said, oh, don't worry about the debt. It doesn't really affect you. Well, it can't possibly not affect me. Talk to me about what costs me more money every single day because of the debt.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, anyone that's in the market for a house right now, trying to mortgage a home or take out a loan, be it for a car or to start a small business, I think is facing higher cost. And that is because we are borrowing so much money. There's only so many lenders out there. And when you have more people trying to borrow money, it's just a supply and demand thing. Those lenders are going to require demand a higher return on their dollars. So you see, that's pushing up interest rates across the board. It's making it more difficult for average Americans to borrow money. You know, if you're on an adjustable rate mortgage, for instance, you feel that very, very powerfully. It's an enormous concern. But, you know, I think across the board, what we're seeing is just all of the spending. It also crowding out private investment. So it's because people are choosing to invest in government instruments rather than in the private sector, it's harder for private companies to raise capital to create jobs and grow their businesses.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I hadn't thought about that because, you know, government's going to keep spending. So invest your money there because you're going to get good returns on it. Meanwhile, somebody who has a company that, you know, when everything crashes, they're going to lose their money. But meanwhile, somebody who has a company that could actually grow is not getting the investment. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, it's a very concerning effect, a crowd out effect. And I think it's happening right now. And it's driving up costs. It's suppressing wages. It's just making it harder for everyday Americans.
Yeah, well, it's been 191 years since we were debt-free, as you know, and it's depressing. Something's got to happen. Problem is that, you know, spending money is good for, that's how people get back into office. Oh, look what I did. I brought this new center into your neighborhood, or I bought this new, you know, whatever. And that's all costing all of us money.
That's absolutely true. It's much more politically advantageous to do those ticker tape parades where you're opening up a new business or whatever, or, you know, you get money for the local water fountain or pickleball courts or whatever kind of ridiculous spending, and people are real happy with you. They don't really throw you a parade when you cut spending.
No,
we need
they
to change
don't.
That.
Yeah, I love it when they pull up the lectern, podium, what do you want to call it, where they speak from? I guess it's a lectern. And they just magically pull that up into the middle of a freeway and go, and they all stand out and pass out donuts and make speeches and you know, do their big, you know, ribbon cutting. And it's more money out of my pocket is the way I look at it. Just open the other lane and shut up is what I want to say to these people.
Absolutely. I hate it when they name these installations, these roads or travel centers or whatever after politicians, as if it was their money. They just went and diverted my money toward this project, and they used their power and their clout to do so. They didn't take a nickel out of their own wallet.
That's what I want. Taxpayers off ramp. How about that? That's a good name for something like that.
There you go.
Taxpayers bridge. Brandon Arnold, National Taxpayers Union. Thanks for joining the Mark Reardon Show. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Heidi. Really appreciate
it. Thanks for being here. Thanks. It's sad, isn't it? I mean, people don't realize how the national debt affects you, but we're talking $40 trillion. I don't know how they can ever get this down. I have no idea. But it's hard to believe that we've been in debt for 191 years, most of our entire existence as a nation. And it just keeps growing every year. And if you look at the list of where we were at certain times, and we put that down, crazy. I looked at this list. I had to look this up because I didn't know all these details. In the 1980, we were $908 billion. 1990, $3.2 trillion. Trillion, that's a lot of zeros. By 2000, it was $5 trillion, almost six. By 2008, $10 trillion. 2012, $16 trillion, and on it goes. I mean, it's not funny, guys. I'm laughing because it's one of those things where you can either laugh or cry at the amount of money this government owns. I mean, owes, but how many people, you know, have an interest in it? And at what point would another, you know what they say, what the Bible says about being a debtor? You're a slave to the lender, whether you're, you know, private person. I'm certain that applies to nations too. You're a slave to the lender when they've got you over a barrel, literally over a barrel. Sad. And that's the problem. You know, these politicians, they love to go back to DC or whether it's a, you know, local place. You know, they go to Jeff City or wherever they go, wherever the state that you're in. They go there and they, you know, want to talk about all these good things they did while they were in office. And oh, we got you a new soccer field. We got you a new baseball field. We got you this. We got you that. And you multiply that by every jurisdiction around the country. You know what happens there. And I'm not saying money doesn't need to be spent to fix roads and bridges and things like that. But is it spent the most efficiently? Probably not. And that's a part of it, too. And the rest of us sit down at the kitchen table and decide, OK, I want to do this. Can we afford it? And government doesn't work that way. And we all know it. They're not accountable. And a lot of times, if they don't spend all the money they had this year, then they're not going to be able to ask for the same amount next year. So there's an incentive for them to spend. You know, if I went to my husband, not that he controls everything I do, but, it, you know, in that regard. But if I went to my husband and said, well, you know, you gave me $100 last week. I blew all of it. I need 150 next week. He would say, well, what did you spend it on? Like I would to him. What? Where did that money go? Oh, well, I need more this week because I spent it all last week. And if you bring it down to the personal level, that's really what it comes down to. But government has no incentive. Their only incentive is to get more money next year, and they have to spend all the money they have. There's no incentive to save any of it. And who knows what this Iran war is going to cost us? Who knows at the end of the day? Between all the things that we're running through, all the ammo and everything we're running through, that we do have to have on hand. In case we tangle with China in 2027, which a lot of people are talking about. But they're not problem solvers, are they? They're just politicians. That's the truth. I'm Heidi Harris, in for Mark Reardon. I'm Heidi Harris, in for Mark Reardon. We haven't even heard from Sue Thomas yet today, have we?
Sort of.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of, sort of. How you doing?
Mm. Pardon me, I just took a drink of water. Great.
I was going to say, did I catch you?
Yes.
It's Friday, and you're going out to the golf tournament this weekend, right?
Yeah, my brother's coming into town. He lives in Houston, and he's a big golfer. And I had said, do you want to come for this thing? And he said, I don't know if I can swing it. Then, of course, it got closer, and he said, I'll be there Friday. Come pick me up. I said, okay. So we're going tomorrow, and I think it'll be really nice and warm. We've gone to one, but not too crazy hot. We've gone to one in Wisconsin before. When he was at some dinner and bid on, you know, going to Whistling Straits and watching the PGA. So we were there just when it opened. And it was really fun. I liked walking around, sit down and watch Tiger at one point. So I'll just do that, plant myself at one hole and watch Scottie Scheffler and all the people come through. I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be great. Now, having been to one of those tournaments before, I never have. They have a lot of real strict rules on what you can carry with you and the size of hats you can wear and things like that, right?
Yeah, they do. And that's a good point. I'm going to have to look that up. But the one thing I did look up, can I bring a chair? You know, just the folding kind. And they said, yes, but you can't bring the container for the chair. So I guess you can't take the shoulder sling, but you can carry the chair itself. And then my neighbor told me, you can bring a container for water, but it can't have anything in it when you get there. So I got to dig in and see what's up.
Wow. Well, that's true, because the last thing you want to do is show up there with it. And then you have to go back to your car with it or whatever else. You don't want to hassle with it. But yeah, they're picky, like at the Masters and things like that. They're picky about, I think, even the size of your hats and all kinds of things that you can't have on the course. Or you can't leave the chair there or something. You have to bring it with you or
something. Yeah, you got to take it at the end. They don't want a bunch of chairs everywhere, but... And I don't understand how it's set up, so I look forward to getting there and seeing the tents and the merch tent. And my another neighbor works at Duo Dogs, which is a local organization that, you know, trains puppies for people who need it. So they'll have a tent, and she said, oh, you can go there. So I look forward to it. It's fun to have it here.
Oh, yeah. That's a great, it's a huge event, and it's going to be beautiful weather and everything. What kind of puppies does she train?
Well, they do. I think it's mostly labs. But if you need any kind of assistance, I mean, any kind of service animal, they train them for kids, for adults, for whatever you need. And they just had two litters. She's a whelper helper.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, they come up with all these names for it. But, yeah, it's a great local charity. And I'm not sure how they're involved out there. But I look forward to seeing that. And I'm sure they'll have at least one dog on hand.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's always a good... Cousin of mine got a dog a few years back, and she had kids, and she just didn't have the time to train a puppy, right?
Little. Sure.
And she actually got adopted, maybe purchased, a lab that had flunked out of some kind of a school for whatever, right? Bomb school or whatever it was, okay? So the dog was a lab, but you already get a great dog, and it was about a year old, so it's already been trained in the basics. You know, but it was easier for her to do that than try to have a puppy because she was busy and the kids and this and that.
Did it work?
And it worked out great. That was it worked out great.
Yeah.
Because there are always dogs that maybe, you know, there are bird dogs that are born to be bird dogs who don't look for birds. And these kind of things happen.
Right.
And then breeders maybe look for somewhere else to go.
Or if they're too interested in things like food. She said that's an issue. That some of them, you know, they try to train them, but there will be somebody who flunks because that cheeseburger just looks too good. You know, they've set up different scenarios and they're supposed to at some point be able to just sit and ignore. And not everyone can. Mm-mm.
No, they can't. I just adopted a dog. I didn't plan to adopt this dog, but a friend of mine had bought a dog at a pet store last year. Little cockapoo, teddy bear looking thing. Oh, she's adorable. And I was going to find her a home because I already have three dogs.
Oh,
and long story short, wound up keeping her because she had some behavioral issues when I got her. And I thought somebody else is going to return her. And I'm going to work through this with her. Other people might go, oh, she does this, she does that.
You know,
but
what?
One
that's
of the things
true.
That's really... That, right? Because other people would say, oh, she's so cute. Oh, she growls at my other dogs when they want to get on the couch. That's right. We have to work through that, which we did. Okay. She doesn't do that anymore. But my gosh, she was raised in a home with nice people. No one abused her, but very busy home. And they had a toddler. Well, toddlers teach dogs what? To eat off the coffee table. Because that's where the goldfish crackers are, right?
Yes.
And I have one of my dogs is just off the street. Someone literally dumped the dog in a cat carrier next to my house. And this one is, you know, was living in a home. I think it's easier to have a dog who has not learned any habits at all, which was my street dog, versus this pet store dog, because I'm having to teach her that, no, the coffee table is not an additional place to find food.
Does she just have small dog issues, you know?
No, she doesn't. She just lived in a house that was, they were very busy people who had her, worked a lot of hours and just didn't have the time to train her, but no one abused her or anything, but they had a toddler. And you know how toddlers are, they drop their goldfish crackers, they walk around the house. And so the dog learns to grab what they can when they can.
True.
You know, and so she will, she's much better than she used to dive across the other dogs to try to get something I was giving out. Now she sits patiently. It took time to teach her that because I had to not only reverse what she'd learned, I had to teach her new habits.
Yeah, that's a
thing. I got to quit talking. Yeah, I got to quit talking, Sue. Ethan just told me I got to wrap. I'm just going on and on. Okay, I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon.
Get more at 971talk.com.